Blog Talk Radio.
Mind Shift Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Mind Shift Talk Radio. I am your host, Stacey Emery, joining you live from sunny California. Yes, I am back home in California, and I am so excited to be home. You know, it is just an awesome Monday, as always. It's always great to be talking to you guys live from Atlanta, but there's no place better than home, right? So thank you for joining us for tonight's Mind Shift Talk Radio episode. I am joined by my awesome and phenomenal co-host, Dr. Ayo Kadar. Can you hear me, Ayo?
I sure can. Hey, everybody.
All right, ladies. I gave you Miss, Lady, Ma'am, Dr. Ayo, all that great stuff. See, I didn't know what to call you. All that in a bag of chips. So this is Ladies Night, and that's another reason this is so fun, because this is Ladies Night. You know, normally we have the guys on. We'll normally have Billy on, or one of our, you know, male co-hosts or guests on the line. But tonight, it is Ladies Night. And not that this conversation has to do only with women, but we just thought it would be fun just to mix it up a little bit. So the topic tonight, for those of you that did not get to read the profile or see what was coming up this week, we are going to be talking about interracial marriages as well as interracial dating. Now, for those of you that may have missed the last few weeks' episodes, this whole month we've been focusing on family and parenting. And so we've talked about, you know, parenthood from a single father's perspective. You know, we started off the month talking about children and internet and just some of the, you know, the safety concerns that are out there and some of the things that our children are having to deal with that we didn't have to deal with before. You know, last week we talked about it takes a village and how it takes a village to raise children. And so we thought this week would be really interesting for us to talk about blended families in terms of interracial families and how it affects children. Now, many times, you know, when you talk about this conversation, it could be considered taboo. You think about this topic, it could be considered controversial. So we want to make sure that we're just basically sharing our perspective with you guys. Please know, for those of you that are new to Mind Shift Talk Radio, there is no holds barred here. You know, we basically share our perspectives, we share our thoughts, we share our concerns, and we let you know how we feel. You don't have to agree with us, but we guarantee you by the end of the show, there will be a mind shift that will take place. You know, you may come in with one perspective. By the end of the show, you may be looking at things totally different. And so that's the whole point of the show, just to get you to think outside of the box. And so we're very happy to have a great guest on the line with us today. And shortly, you'll be introduced to her. Aya will go ahead and introduce her to you. But before going into the conversation, the reason we decided to do this, in addition to how it affects children and so forth, there's just been so much going on in the news about interracial relationships. You know, Ayo, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that article or that there was this email going around about, they said it was written in Jet Magazine. I don't know if you got the email where it says that it was this woman talking about how she said she was a white woman and she didn't understand why so many people were quote-unquote hating on white women dating black men. And so in the email, she talks about, you know, how black women need to get it together if we don't want to see black men dating outside of our race. And so there was just this whole bunch of – did you get that email?
I saw that,
okay.
Yeah.
And so there's still a question about it because some people say that a black man actually wrote the article. I don't know who wrote the article, but I know it raised some hairs on the back of my neck. You know, it was just like, whoa, because I read it a few times, and every time I read it, it still makes me feel some kind of way. You know, there are some interesting points in it, and of course, we all like the way the email ends, because at the end, he talks about why he loves the black woman. But now, I mean, just think about it, like, especially with me being back home this week, you know, I'm looking around, there's, like, I never was really race conscious growing up in Los Angeles. Because here, you know, it's just basically a big melting pot, you know, and I was talking about this weekend, friends growing up, most of my closest friends were Hispanic and so forth, you know, growing up, in the inner city, it was mostly Hispanic friends. And even outside of that, even going to college, it wasn't just like, you know, just my black friends. I had some of everyone in my circle, and it was so fun. It was great. And I never was really aware of race until I moved to Atlanta. And I think it was the first time that I was ever called the N-word was like maybe 2 years after I moved to Atlanta, you know. So I was like, wow, everything here is so black and white. And I listened to conversations that people have about relationships in Atlanta, and the conversation is totally different than it is here in California. It's like it's more accepted here in L.A. than it is in the South. And so I wanted to talk about that tonight. I wanted to talk about, you know, why it's viewed differently depending on where you are. You know, I wanted to talk with your guest, you know, with our special guest, but really with the, I say your guest because you're really going to be having that deep conversation with her, and I'm excited about this. So I really want to just talk more about, you know, her perspective and some of the challenges and the benefits that go along with interracial dating. And so that's basically it. But anyway, going back to that whole Jet article, so like I said, that Jet article was going around, or that email, whatever it may be, and people, you know, felt all sorts of way about that. But go ahead and tell me, like, if you, I don't know, did you, you said you got a chance to read it. What were your thoughts when you read it? Like, initially when you first read it, were you, did you think a white woman really wrote it, or did you think, like, someone's playing? Did you think it was a joke?
You know what? Honestly, Stacey, I thought it was funny. Because when I read stuff like that, that's so hilarious to me to have, for someone to generalize a whole race or gender
right.
of people. Is so ignorant, you know. So I thought it was funny. I thought it was comical, you know, because I don't think you can, seriously, I mean, I don't think you can say whether it's black men or black women. And nowadays, there is a lot of black women who are dating, have an interracial dating. So it's not, you know, the times are definitely changing. And I'm in Kentucky, and you would not believe, this is where I've seen the most black women dating outside of their race. And you would not think that in Kentucky. I'm like, wow, you know. So I thought the article, I thought it was comical. I thought it was a joke because, you know, of course, the first thing I was thinking was like, who does this lady think she is? To tell
right.
me what I need to do, you know what I mean, from a black woman's perspective. Now, it's like I can't talk about being a white female because I'm not one. You know what I mean?
Right.
I can only
right.
speak from my perspective. So I really thought it was comical and slightly ignorant. And, you know, I don't know if it was a male. Now that you said that, I hadn't even thought of that, but maybe it was a black male that.
I can see that,
you know,
right?
That
and it's. I could see that, and it's funny because this really shows, like, the difference in our personalities because, like you said, you're goofy anyway, Aya. Like, you're worse than me. So you would just see some humor in it as soon as you read it. Now, me, I'm like, hold up. You know what I mean? I'm like, ready to, like, yoke up. On, yeah, like, hold up. Who does he think she is?
You
think
my earrings off, but get stereotypical here.
You know, put on my big rings and my Vaseline, like, ready to go crap, you know. But then it was like, okay, read it the second time, and it was like, I don't know. And the third time I read it, I was like, yeah, this is a dude saying this. But like I said, it really doesn't matter who wrote it. I mean, it has some valid points, and it really makes you think like, you know, is that the way that it seems from a white woman's perspective? Like you said, I can't say because I don't know. And in terms of how some of the sisters feel about it, you know, like I say, I hear mixed emotions on it. I hear some women that say, I don't care. You know, if he's dating outside the race, we probably don't want him anyway. And then you have other women that say, well, it's just not fair because now we can't get a man, a black man, because he's dating outside the race and now it's a problem. But like you said, more women are starting to date outside of the race. And that can open up a totally different conversation. I was just talking to my girlfriend today about it. And we were just talking about how, you know, it's kind of like slim pickings in a sense. You know, in terms of sisters finding that solid, strong, successful, compassionate, all those great things that describe the man that we would want. But for me, you know, my question is, why does he have to come in a chocolate package? Now, that would be great. You know what I mean? For me personally, that would be awesome. I love it. You know, but do we really have to limit our view like that? Do we have to sit there and say, okay, well, we have to be closed off, you know, to the color of his skin? For me, it's just so much deeper than that. You know, it has more to do with spirituality. It has more to do with their values and their morals and their character and so forth. And so I think we kind of shoot ourselves in the foot thinking we have to just limit ourselves to dating people only in our race. But go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to you because. go ahead.
You know, it's funny when you were talking about in regions, because I was raised in, you know, I always had a bunch of different colored friends. You know, I was never, being a military child, we always have to deal with, you know, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until, when was it? I went to one high school for a few months that was a predominantly black high school. And that was like an interesting experience for me because I had never, you know, really been in an all-black school. And I was only there for a short time, but my biggest, you know, what I can really remember, because since my school was so, the high school I ended up being in was so many different races, you know, like I have homegirls that are Filipinos, that are Italian, you know, I love everybody,
right.
And I was used to being around everyone. And so when I decided on my school, I was like, you know, I really felt like I didn't know black people that well. So I went to an HBCU. I went to Historically Black College because I was like, I need to know my people. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
I need to be
right.
able to get along with black people. You know, really, that was my thinking. Sounds crazy, but that's really why I decided to go to a Historically Black College. And because I felt like I didn't know how to get along with you know, just with black people, really and truly. And, you know, being in the South, because I went to FAMU, and being in the South, just like you said, in Georgia, it's a totally different, you know, it's a totally different by the region. You know, you can go up north, and it's common to see multicultural, multiracial people. You know, they're just people. You don't see colors. But down in the South, you know, even amongst black people, there's still a distinction between being red, you know, and yellow. And, you know, there was so many battles in just our own culture and our own problems that we have with our own colors. Black folks, black people have a problem, deep-rooted problems with the color of our skin, with the variance of, you know, light to dark. You know, clowning people because, you know, you about as dark as night or, you know, stuff like that where we how we feel about each other is really the root cause of the issue. Like, without bringing other races in it, and going back to one book that I read that was a really turning point for me is the Willie Lynch story.
Yeah.
And, you know, they really start to, in that book, start to discuss the slave mentality and how slavery has built a gap between the black men and the black woman. And until we get to our root issues that black men and black women have, number one, with ourselves, and then secondly, with each other, you know, we're not going to move forward. And as far as it goes with, you know, taking one black man away, okay? To me, honestly, that's a joke. You know what I mean? Seriously, like, come on. Really, the statistics of me losing a black man to another racial, you know, another race, look, let me go ahead and throw jail in there. I'll lose you quicker to jail, to being gay, to a whole lot of things to get to before I get to losing you to, you know, to another race. I mean, really and truly. So, you know, let's get the, you know, it's so much bigger than that. But anyway, guys, we can go on forever, but I want to introduce Anissa West. Guys, she's just an absolutely phenomenal woman, okay? And she's going to share with us her background, and you'll understand why she was a perfect example of gumbo, as Stacey put on the title tonight, is the gumbo, you know, because she's a mixture.
Family.
Yes, the gumbo family, because she's definitely a mixture, and her perspective, you know, she's, like I said, she's a phenomenal woman, and she... her perspective on things and how she studied and, you know, the history, you know, she can definitely bring more insight to what we're talking about because, again, you know, as me and Stacey are talking, we're speaking from our perspective. And Anissa is going to give us, you know, she's going to shed more light on it because she's she, number one, is herself multiracial, multicultural, and then she has children that she's raising as well. So, Anissa, are you on the line? Can you hear us?
Yes, I'm on the line.
Yay.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for that awesome, you know, introduction. That was wow. So, yes, as I have said, I am a bit of a gumbo. You know, my family history is very diverse, although I did not grow up in a home that was, you know, one particular race and another particular race, or, you know, half and half, which is what you typically hear about. But, you know, I did grow up with a mixture of African-American heritage and some Native American heritage, and living here in Oklahoma, there is quite a bit of a stress on knowing your history. And our history here in Oklahoma, as African-Americans here, is going to be a little bit different than a lot of African-Americans in other states, because our history of slavery goes back to tribal slavery. And so that's a whole nother can of worms that we don't even have time to talk about on this call. But basically, you know, I'm of both African-American and Native American ancestry. And then my children are half Vietnamese. So, you know, I mean, we have a different situation. I've raised my children around their traditional Muscogee Creek, which is the name of the tribe that we have history in. I've raised them around their traditional culture. They've been raised around their Vietnamese culture, and of course, they've been raised around, you know, black people. They know all of that. And so their perspective on life is just going to be a little bit different than a lot of people. I tell my daughters all the time, I mean, since they were little, that, you know, they are really and truly a gift, that they're sacred, because, you know, we do have some European heritage, we do have some Native American heritage and Asian heritage, and if we were to look at our traditional cultures as them being of people from all four corners of the earth, you've got your red, your white, your black, and your yellow, they are all of that. And so they don't have anything to be ashamed of. If anything, they have everything to be proud of, because they have they encompass all of what the world is. And so that's my take on that as far as my children go. Mm-hmm. But they still deal with some issues.
I have a question, just because I know you're about to continue with that, but just I'm still stuck on Vietnamese. Because I think that's a really interesting mix, but I'm just curious, how did you guys meet?
Oh, my children's father, that is interesting. Mm-hmm. Vietnamese, we met in high school, basically. He was American-born, raised in an African-American neighborhood.
Wow.
Went to historically black schools from elementary all the way through high school. And I did not. I did not grow up in an African-American neighborhood. And the only reason why we ever came in contact with each other is because we were in a magnet school program in high school that bused kids from other sides of town into that school, which is a historically black high school.
Wow.
And mind you, it's actually the school that my grandparents met at. So it's really interesting. You know, it's a school that's filled with tradition. It's one of the top 100 schools in the nation, Booker T. Washington High School here in Tulsa. And, you know, they bus kids now. It used to be just African-American schools. Now they've fixed it to where, you know, about 50% of the school is typically, they try to maintain it as people from the community, and the rest of the kids are bused in from other sides of town. For the most part, it's kind of, the numbers are funny, but that's how we met, you know.
Wow. So that story is a little different, because he's used to being around African-Americans. I mean, has he always dated black women?
Yes, he's never. In fact, he's gone on to marry another one. So, I don't see him ever dating anyone who's not black, because that's where he was raised.
Right. Wow. So he identifies with black.
Yeah,
folks. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, he from birth, from when his parents brought him home from the hospital, it was in that neighborhood. I mean, and we're talking in the hood at that. So,
right.
I mean, he lived in a house that his parents owned right behind the project. So,
See, that's what's so different about it, because it makes you think, okay, well, it was much easier for him to be able to, you know, for you guys to be able to have children together and so forth, because that's all he identified with were black people. But how much was he into his own culture? Like, was he very active in terms of, you know, celebrations and practices and cultural practices and so forth like that? Is he really into it, or is it just like, yeah, I'm Vietnamese, but I'm black really at the same time, you know?
I think there's a lot of give and take struggling, because him being the parents' oldest child, you know, Vietnamese was his first language.
So
he speaks the language fluently. And he does celebrate their holidays and whatnot. And as a child, went to a Vietnamese church. He grew up around Vietnamese people as well.
Okay.
But, you know, when you're going to school every day this is with any ethnicity. If he had been placed in a white community, it would have been the same way. You can spend however much time within your traditional community every single day if you want to, but who you're with at school all day is typically who you're going to identify with the most. Schools mold the child. That's just how it is. That's who's typically, that's pretty much who's raising our kids are the schools. So, he identifies very much with his Vietnamese culture too. I mean, there are things traditionally that, I could see, you know, as far as, you know, who's in control of what, you know, which is very, you know, very Asian-like. And then other things that, you know, are just very American. It just,
So were there any expectations that he had for you, like when you guys first got into the relationship, were there any expectations placed on you as far as you having to learn more about his culture or traditions or anything like that?
No, he didn't place any expectations on me. I just naturally did a lot of things. When my daughters were little, I made sure that I learned, you know, I made it a point to learn how to count in Vietnamese, and I taught my daughters how to count, but at the same time, I was also trying to teach them how to count in Creek, you know, because I was trying to learn that culture. I've always been one of those people who tries to make sure my kids are connected with various parts of the culture, and no one ever pressured me to do it. That's just who I am. So, no, there was never.
Do you think let me ask you this, because we know that, you know, we like to think of ourselves as evolved, and there's still many among us that, you know, the actions reveal the attitude, you know, of how people really feel about people who are different from themselves, you know, especially right now with the whole, you know, and this is a religion thing, but the whole situation right now at Ground Zero, where, you know, they don't want the mosque being built. We have Christians going against Muslims because they don't want the mosque being built. And that, you know, to me, can transfer into a race thing. You know, they're trying to make it about religion, but they keep saying Muslims. And so when I Muslims as, you know, so we know that even though racism in America is still alive, and now it has become more subtle, but, you know, as a parent, how do you raise your biracial children, or even from your perspective, because you yourself are biracial, how do you equip them to deal with racism and its, you know, the subtleness of racism in today's?
Well, My daughters and I, we talk a lot. I mean, that's one thing, is real openness, a whole lot of openness, and just being really candid with them. I was fortunate enough to get them into an international school where they're able to embrace, you know, learning about people from other places. It's kind of, it's normal there, but we discuss ethnicity. I ask them, you know, for their opinion a lot. You know, I mean, that's one thing that a lot of parents don't do, is ask their children for their opinion. A lot of times we do a lot of talking and telling and not enough receiving their feedback. So I do a whole lot of getting their feedback so that I can see how they're feeling and what they're going through, and what their perceptions are, and see what I need to say to help them cope. I know one great example was I heard my oldest daughter years back, I think she was about 7 and her younger sister was 5, and some kids in the neighborhood, they were black kids, and they all asked the younger one, who has darker skin than any of us, but pretty much straight hair. They asked her, well, what are you? And she just looked at them kind of like, what kind of question is that, you know? And then they were like, yeah, are you black? Are you Chinese? Are you Mexican? What are you? And she just said, okay, look, do you want to play or not? And we ended up having a conversation about that, because I wanted to know what was going on through her head when she said that, and I needed to know why she was able to express herself in that way, but the older one was expressing herself a little bit differently. You know, the older child, you know, she struggles a little bit more with it than the younger one. And I think it could be when you're younger, you watch what the other people are going through, and you can develop these sort of preventative measures. You know what I mean? That you can overcome. Sure. So she's learning while watching everyone else. So we'll take those little things that happen, and most people will just laugh about them and let them go by, but we'll take them and talk about them. Sometimes, okay, so what were you thinking, and why do you think that person asked you that, and if you had to answer that question, what would you answer, and you know, and her answer was, you know, honestly, I don't care. That was, I mean, she was very flippant about it. It was just like, look, we're either going to play or we're not.
Oh, you know.
What does my color have to do with it?
So, like, look, I did not come over here for this. I'm trying to play.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like one story I was reading. There was a story just like that where it was a woman talking about she's a white woman married to a Pakistani man, but her children look brown. You know, they have a light brown complexion. She's just because they look like tea with milk. That's what she said, her children like tea with milk. But she said she was in a store, and her son ran over from another aisle and was like, oh, mommy, I was just playing with this nice little black girl over in the aisle. And so she was like, okay, that's great that you were playing with this nice little girl, but why does she have to be a little black girl? Why couldn't she just be a nice little girl? And the little girl's mom overheard the conversation, and the mom actually went off on the black mother went off on the white woman and said, what type of nonsense is that for you to tell your child? Why would you tell your child that he can't identify my daughter as a black girl? That's what she is. She's a black girl. And so the white woman was like, well, I just don't understand why we would have to say she's black. That's like, okay, that person's nice because they're white. Like, why do we have to identify race and everything like that? Like, why is that important? And so she said they went back and forth in the grocery store. And I thought that was crazy because, personally, I would do the same thing. I would tell my son the same thing. Why does it have to be? Why does she have to be a little black girl or a little white boy or whatever it may be? Why can't it just be a little boy or a little girl? I'm sorry, there I go with the black. why do we have to say that? You know, like, why does it have to be this label associated with individuals that we come into contact with? I don't understand that. It's like, even with us, I know for me personally, growing up, and my sister, we clown about this all the time, because we get people that ask us all the time, are you mixed? You know, are you Indian? And so my sister was like, it got to the point where she was tired of being asked, are you Indian? She would just say yes. And then someone will say, okay, so, you know, what are you mixed with? If you're Indian, what are you mixed with? She'll just say Jeep Cherokee. And they'll stop and look puzzled for a minute. Right? Just like that. Right, yeah. Like, why do I have to be mixed up? You know, I'm just like, we all have something else going on. Like, truly, there's just gumbo going on with all of us. You know, I think we all have something going on, you know. And I think that's what makes us so unique. It makes us so interesting. It's just like the whole dynamic of black people in general. You know, I think we have just so many influences in terms of our culture and so forth. And it's important for kids to know all these different aspects. I think it's important for kids to be exposed to people of different races and different cultures and so forth, because that's just the way of the world nowadays. You know, it's just like there was this big uproar. Remember, you guys remember a few years ago when they were talking about Tiger Woods and he was saying he's not black? You guys remember when that happened?
Yeah.
And people were, like, so ticked off about it. My thing was, like, so? If he doesn't want to be black, he doesn't want to be white, he doesn't want to be Japanese, I mean, that's on him. That has nothing to do with me. And maybe that's just me. I'm just always like, so? I don't really get all.
I mean, the thing is, I think a lot of the times, as I think black people, we see color more than other folks. Like, even, you know, because a lot of the white people that I know, they're scared to say stuff related to race. Like, especially guys, you know, when I'm in the pharmacy, you know, working, you know, they don't want to say, oh, it was the black woman that was acting crazy. They do not want to put a race in front of it. It'll be me. You know, I'd be like, that black lady's over there acting like a hot, you know what I mean? But the thing is, I don't say, oh, that white lady was over there acting crazy. You know, it's like,
right.
But we do. We define ourselves by our blackness. Like, we are defined by being black. Like, you know, I'm a black female. I feel like black folks, we carry our race, like, on our backs. Like, yes, I'm black. You know what I mean?
It's a badge of honor, like a big B on the back, right?
Yes.
And see, I mean, you and I have had this conversation before. You know, that right there is so discomforting to me, because I never understood it. In the home that I grew up in, it was never, you know, we never talked about how black we are.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard that type of talk. So it actually wasn't until I was in middle school when I was approached by some black girls while I was sitting at a lunch table that was a very diverse lunch table. There was an Asian boy and some white girls and Hispanic girl and, you know, just and me. And, you know, we were just sitting there talking, laughing. And some I'm new at that school, and black girls came over and said, well, what color are you? Just randomly. Just came over, and it was a situation where the blacks were the minority in the school. And what I noticed what they were doing is trying to get all of the black kids to band together and to believe that they needed to have this sort of group, this solidified group that defined themselves verbally as being the black kids and hung out together, and who believed that everybody else in the school was against them because they were black. And if you did not identify with them, oh, it was on. It was time to fight. And, in fact, that's exactly what happened to me. Yeah, I wasn't a kid who fought in school, but it went down when I was walking down the hall one day and someone came up behind me and cut my hair.
Get out.
And from then on, it was.
Wait a minute, cut your hair? Like scissors cut your hair?
Literally walked up behind me with some scissors, seventh grade, and cut my hair.
But, you know, that's just a totally different level of ignorance right there. That's just technical.
It's self-hatred.
Totally.
A lot of that
right?
is self-hatred.
It's self-hatred. You know, these are girls who were making a really big deal about, you know, the fact that I had long hair and they didn't. And, you know, this is the whole good hair, bad
good hair
culture. And, you know, I didn't get it. I didn't understand. You know, I didn't. I had just left a school where, you know, it was a little bit more diverse. We all kind of hung out with everybody, you know. And then to go to that environment was just culture shock.
Right.
I didn't get it. No one had ever asked me to really, really define myself as only black. I told them I'm not just black. I'm black in some other stuff. You know, I'm a whole lot of things. Why are you interrupting my lunch for this?
You know, it was just, and that makes me think of this one guy in high school as well. And it's still funny to me. I won't even lie. It's funny when I think about it. But it's just to show you, like, he was so, and it's funny because he was in the city. I don't know where he got this from, but his thing was like, okay, either you're black or you're white. And so I was like, what do you mean? He was like, that's it. There's two races. You're black or white. And I was like, how can you just be black or white? What about, you know, our Mexican friends? I had a lot of Mexican friends growing up and all the stuff like that. And he was like, no. He was like, I have a Mexican homegirl. He was like, well, she's a white girl with a taco. I said, what about Asian? White people with chow mein. I'm like, what about Italian? White people with pizza. Yes. It was like, white people with pizzas. He was like, they are all white. And like, if you're not black, you are white. And I was just like, that is crazy. But for real, like, everything I could roll out, you know, any race I could throw out there, he was like, white person with something else. I was like,
oh,
this
wow.
dude is off the chain. But, you know, and one thing that still gets under my skin is when people say, oh, you have good hair. You ever think about that? Good hair. And I'm like, what is good hair? You know, and it was even yesterday, you know, we went to a festival out here, and I took my son with me, and some folks were like, oh, he's handsome. He has some good hair. And my thing is,
2 points.
Look, you know, I'm like, isn't all hair good, though? I'm like, it's good if you have some, especially for a female. As long as you've got some hair, it's good. You know, we've got all types of products to handle and manage any grade of hair that you have. So that just gets on my nerves when I hear that good hair. But it's just to tell you, like I said, that's still being said now. Now, that irritated me hearing that as a child growing up. But now, you know, my son is hearing that now. And I'm sure generations to come, you're still going to hear it. And it's like, why are we still having those kind of conversations? Why do we still have this mindset? When is the shift going to take place? You know what I mean? When is there going to be this paradigm shift? When do we become more aware of what's really going on around us and what's really important? Is it really important for me to identify myself as black or white or African or Asian or whatever it may be? Why can't I just be me? Why can't I be the person that's looking to make a difference? Why can't I be the person that's looked at for character? Because can you look at my character? You know, can you look at what type of person I am and what I think, what I have to say? You know, why is it just about what's on the exterior is what I like to say. Because for me, it's like I said, we just miss so many opportunities, even in relationships. I personally, I'll say it, I'm not against interracial relationships and interracial marriages. Is it for me? Probably not. For me personally, not that it's a bad thing. It's just I think about the person that I am, and I think about some of the conversations that I have with people. And I think for me, it's more so I just don't know how the fit would take place. Now, I've never closed myself off from dating outside of my race, but I never have. I've always been open to it. It's just never happened. The opportunity never presented itself. But I just, that's why I think maybe it's not meant to happen for me. But I'm not against it. You know, I see so many success stories. I know people personally, even, you know, in my own family. You know, I have a white brother-in-law that's white, and he is just like the coolest brother-in-law. You know, so cool. But I tell people, when you see him, you wouldn't think he would ever be associated with a black woman. He just doesn't seem like it at all. You know, I say I hope he's not listening. But to me,
I'm wondering, what does someone who's associated with a black woman look like?
Let me tell you, this is what I mean by that. This is what I mean by that. He looks like Jeff Foxworthy, but like way back, like Beverly Hillbillies. Like, just think of a mix with Jeff Foxworthy, Beverly Hillbillies. Like, honestly, if you watch Beverly Hillbillies, would you ever imagine seeing, like, Florence in the Kitchen? That wouldn't go with that, though, right?
I live in Oklahoma, so, I'm not the right person to ask this question to.
Probably not.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is the thing. And that's why it was like when I came to Kentucky, it was the same thing, Stacey. No, seriously. I was thinking, you know, you would see people, because I have dated. I've dated, you know, that was like one of my quiet goals was I wanted to date someone from every culture. You know, I wanted to be able to say I've dated Hispanic, I've dated Black, I've dated White, you know, because, I don't know, I was just, that was just a cool thing for me to do. And
the whole rainbow coalition.
Yeah, seriously, I've dated, you know, I've dated outside of my race. So the thing is, and I guess the reason I don't have that mindset is because when I was in high school is when I would have white guys hit on me. And the first time it happened, I was like, is this dude hitting on me? You know, I was like, you know, because, so it was like you just never knew. So it's not like a picture in my mind of, you know, who would talk to you and who wouldn't, you know. But as far as when you said, when will we ever see no color? And I think when we see no color is when on an application, when it no longer says what race you are, then we see no color.
Man.
That's the day that we see no color, because then race doesn't matter.
And, you know, I still get confused on those applications. Go ahead, Anissa.
And this is just coming from an anthropological perspective, you know, because that is my history. I personally think that the census data and, you know, those terminologies that we see on applications and things like that is just a symptom or a sign of what is already a part of humanity. You know, humans have, I mean, we're meaning-making beings. That is what we do. We create, we put meaning into things. We put meaning into skin color. We put meaning into boundaries and neighborhoods and towns and, you know, islands and things like that, pieces of land and inanimate objects. That is what we do. And that is not going to stop. That was what we were doing before there was pencil and paper. There's always, humans are always going to be drawing a line in the sand between one group and another. They've always done it. They're always going to do it. Now, what we can, though, control is how we interact within a situation and where we are now a unit. And, I mean, you know, what I'm saying is, you know, there's always going to be differences. We're always going to define each other as different. But we can develop coping mechanisms and to where we are not hindering our own success, our own personal progress, or the progress of others by those boundaries. That's where the problem comes, you know, because there's always going to be cultural difference, you know. Someone from India has their certain traditions and their culture, and they can identify a group of people within that tradition and culture by the way they look and the way they dress, or maybe the way they're speaking, or maybe a song that they're singing, and that's perfectly fine to see that, but to, you know, use that as a tool to insult who they are, that's a problem. And
right.
I mean, but yeah, we're always gonna be drawing lines in the sand. That's human nature. That's what we do.
That's a good point. That's a good point, because even when, you know, it was if it wasn't race wars, it was tribal wars. So, you know, that is a good point.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, even in my culture, you know, that still exists. When we were even talking about, when you said this earlier, Io, you were talking about the whole challenge even within our race. In general, you know, about different shades of black and how people identify, you know, with being lighter skinned or dark skinned or something like that. It's just, you know, all these stereotypes that even go along with that. But, you know, I probably shared this with you. Even in my own culture, it still exists, you know. And when my parents were growing up, it was more so than it is now. But even in my culture, there's still this division between the darker skinned individuals and the lighter skinned. And it's really due to the fact that the lighter ones, you know, were enslaved. And so there's just this whole gumbo pot going on there, and there was always this
this challenge as far as merging the two together. You know, for me, looking at it now, when I read up on my ancestry and so forth, it's like, okay, we're all black people, right? But we all look a little different. Excuse me, we all look a little different. We have different backgrounds. But at the end of the day, we're all pretty much African, is my thing. So I'm like, why does there have to be such a divide? But then I've come to learn that it's because of the programming that took place. You know, initially, even with my ancestors, you know, they held on to their African culture and heritage and language even to this day. You know, my mother still speaks the language fluently, my aunts and my uncles and so forth, but it's kind of tapered off and fallen off in generations to come, you know, where I don't know how to speak the language and so forth, but it's still something that I was raised in. I was still raised in my culture. But it's a trip because growing up, I was able to identify as being, you know, my culture is Garifuna. So I knew I was a Garifuna child. You know, I was proud to be Garifuna, and it was great, but I didn't really understand all the dynamics of my ancestry. I didn't understand our history like I do now. And so for me now, it's important that my son is able to identify as being a Garifuna man one day. He'll be a man, you know, to be a Garifuna man. But it's also important for him to understand that just being a black man is something to be proud of, but it's not just about him being a black man. The reason I say there's some pride that goes along with it for me is just knowing the story of my ancestors. And so I want to make sure my son understands that. But it's a trip because, like I said, you know, with him being a lighter brown complexion and having the people say, oh, you have good hair, it's like you don't even really understand how that, for me personally, it's like it just really gets under my skin. You know, say, okay, you just look at him and just see a lighter-skinned boy, you know, with nice hair, and it's just like, okay, he's something else is going on with him, when they don't even understand the half of it. And like I said, it's sad that it even takes place in my own culture. You know, when I went to Belize just in November, and you still can see this divide in the way that blacks think and the way that blacks see each other. And like I said, it's just, and that's why I asked the question, when does this shift take place? I mean, this happened, you know, as far as my ancestors migrating to Belize and so forth, this happened several years ago, you know, and it's like, so when is it going to take, when is the change going to take place? And it's the same thing here. Growing up in California, for me, like I said, I was exposed to every race and culture under the sun, you know, eating menudo and doing all that cool stuff. But even now, 2010, I'm still having to deal with the issues that I dealt with as a child in terms of people wanting you to identify with just one race, with one culture, you know. And like I said, even on those applications, you were just talking about the applications, and you were saying it's not going to change until applications don't ask anymore. But even with that, honestly, I still get confused checking things off on applications because it's like, okay, you're black, not Latino descent or something like that. And then you have Hispanic only. And for me, I remember being in school, and I didn't know what to check off because I'm like, okay, my family is Central American. I'm black. Right? You know, my last name is Hernandez. But I said it worked out in my favor because when I went to college, I was able to get some grants and so forth and scholarships for being Hispanic. I've never identified with being Hispanic. But they saw Hernandez, and bam, I get some scholarship money. I'll take it. I'll cash the check. I'm going to school. Yeah. But where did that come from, you know? But even with the kids now, you know, thinking about your kids, Anissa, you know, how do you get your kids prepared for that? Is there really a way for you to prepare your kids for that? It's pretty much like they just have to walk into it and go through it. You know, they have to just go through the experience on their own.
We talk about it. We talk about it all the time. They know exactly what mom ends up doing typically when she applies for them to go to various programs. That are asking them for their ethnicity. Oftentimes what mom does is she figures out what the stats are, and we put whatever it takes to get them to where they need to be.
Right. They can be everything on the application, right?
Well, no. Let me just break this down like this, okay? When I applied for them to get into the international school that they're in right now, I saw what it took to get in there. We were living in an all-black neighborhood, just about all-black neighborhood. I knew that they were the only Asians in that neighborhood. I also knew that the qualifications to getting, what some of the qualifications were to getting moved to the front of the priority list for getting a transfer to a magnet school, to get transferred out of the neighborhood, to get transferred out of the hood into a nice school. And that was to be one of the to be the only child of your particular cultural background or ethnicity in that school. I said, bam, you're Asian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So to get into the international school that I wanted to put them in, on that application, yes, they were Asian.
Wow.
And sure enough, they got in. They were accepted into all the programs that I applied for, and we just had to pick one.
So you just
that makes me think. I heard a white guy say one time that the worst thing to be in America was white. He was this is a white guy talking about this. Is, I know we're running low on time here, but he was talking about how. And his perception was, you know, right now, you know, in the hip-hop culture and everything, that he was, you know, it was a bad thing. It was looked and frowned upon him. You know, he felt like the weight of history was on his shoulders, you know, even though it was his ancestors that had, you know, that had slaves. He didn't have anything to do with it. When he wanted to get into things, if he was white, you know, it was like, because, you know, the whole affirmative action and everything, he felt like he didn't stand as much of a chance just being a white man getting in versus being a minority. And I was just like, that, you know, I was just flabbergasted by what he said, but that was his perception.
Wow. Well, I mean, but at the same time, I have white friends who apply for scholarships and get full rides to go to a historically black college because they're white. I mean,
exactly.
I actually have a friend who did that. So really what it comes down to it is, you know, me personally and a lot of other people, a lot of other academics don't take it seriously. And it's like, okay, you know what? This whole situation is ridiculous, so you might as well use it to your advantage. We can either sit around and complain about it, or we can just use it to our advantage. At the end of the day, you know, everyone's going to have some sort of a complaint about it. But, I mean, the system is flawed, and it's
definitely not
flawed just tilted in one ethnicity's, benefit. I mean, depending on what angle you look at, it's going to be, you know, geared to help out someone else. So, for example, a white child living in the neighborhood that we were living in would have received preferential treatment because that white child would have been the minority in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's
right.
Statistics, period. You know, and personally, I mean, just if you really look at it, some of the people who have the hardest in the United States are a lot of white poor people are really, really getting hit hard. I mean,
yep.
And that's That is the truth. But, I mean, it's not just them. There are other people, too. So, I mean, there's a lot going on. But as far as stats and kids, definitely with my kids, I walk them through it. With today being the first day of school, we had to fill out some statistics.
Can we fall off? Can you hear me, Aya?
Yeah,
okay.
I thought it was me. I'm like, wait a minute, did my phone just...
I know, that's what I was crying for. And I looked up, I'm like, wait, I still see my phone going, so I'm going to make sure. Okay,
yeah,
she said
her phone died, so,
okay.
I mean, wow.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, we're talking about gumbo families, and for me, the focus is more on the children and how it affects the children. But at the end of the day, you know, it's just like we said, there really isn't a way to, you know, prepare children for the challenges that are going to come along, whether they're biracial or not. You know, I think there's enough challenges just trying to raise, you know, your black children to understand who they are. And there's probably challenges for white families in terms of raising their children. I don't know because I'm not there. But really, I think at the end of the day, it just comes down to the communication piece, you know, as far as parents are concerned. I think there's a lot of work that we have to do as parents in terms of our own identities and being comfortable with ourselves and being comfortable with our ancestry and our history before we can instill that pride in our children. So it doesn't matter if they're mixed up with, you know, five different backgrounds or if there's just one. The work still starts with the parent at the end of the day, you know, because it's our job to get them mentally prepared for what they're going to deal with out there. We don't know every circumstance they're going to run into. We don't know every experience they're going to have, but it's our responsibility to make sure that they're mentally capable of dealing with whatever it is that's thrown at them, if that makes sense.
I agree. I got Anissa said she's back on. If we
okay.
If you see her in there. I agree, Stacey. I think you know, it falls back onto the parents and first understanding, you know, not forcing upon your children whatever you went through. You know, giving them, sharing your perspective, but being open minded. You know, I feel that we have a mulatto president. You know, some people get mad, you know, black, whatever you guys want to call him. He's got a little bit of something
with
for
a little
everybody.
Bit of milk. Tea with a little bit of milk. I like that one. Tea with a little bit of milk. Well, that, you know, like I said earlier in the show, I said we're talking about interracial relationships and, you know, all the things that go along with that. But also, I do want us to talk a little bit more about the cultural aspect of it. And that brings me back to why I'm here. I didn't even share why I am here in L.A. for this week, but I really came out for my niece's wedding. And I don't want to give too much on it right now because I'm just giving you a little bit because we're going to roll out this discussion. We have to have a part two next week because obviously we can't wrap it all up in just this one conversation. So we're going to have a part two to this next week. But next week we're really going to discuss more not only race but also cultural differences and religious differences as well and how that affects the family. Unfortunately, I think when we have discussions like this about interracial marriages and relationships and stuff like that, you know, when you read up on it, you read so much of the negative information. I wanted to hear more of the positive side to it. But I'm here because, like I said, I attended my niece's wedding, and that was very different. And I'll share more of that story next week. For those of you that were thinking about not being here, you better be here next week for that show because it's going to be awesome. We will have a special guest on the line next week that will be able to share her experience and give us specifics in terms of some of the things that she's going through in her own marriage and some of the things that her and her husband had to overcome when they decided to get married. And then, of course, we're going to talk about how it affects their children and the whole dynamics of the family. So it's going to be a very interesting show. I encourage everyone to be on here next week. But Anissa, thank you so much for joining us tonight for Mindshift. It was great having you on here. I love your energy and everything. So
thank you so much. You know, I really appreciate you guys having me on. And really quick, I know you're about to close out, but, you know, what I wanted to tell you all is, you know, one of my very favorite quotes is by a Native American man named John Trudell, who said, "I'm just a human being trying to make it in a world that is very rapidly losing its understanding of being human." And that's something that I keep in mind as I raise my children. I raise them to be human first and foremost. We are human. Right. And that's how I'm preparing them for life, as just people.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, again, thank you for being on the show with us. It was great having you. Dr. Io, you're the best,
hey.
The bestest, bestest, bestest. So, again, we look forward to hearing from you guys next week. We didn't get a chance to take any calls this week, but we encourage you to join us next week again. You know, definitely feel free to call in and share your perspective. We do want to hear your thoughts. We want to hear your concerns. Whatever it may be, we want you to enlighten us as well. And also, the chat room is open. Thank you to those of you that are in the chat room representing, as always. You know, Mr. Chris Gloss is there. Woo-hoo, Chris Gloss is there, as always, holding it down in the chat room. I was reading some of the comments in there from a Dr. Ooh-wee, which was very interesting. There were a couple of people in the chat room just having me cracking up a little bit, and Io, you probably saw that. But, again, thank you guys for joining us. We will talk to you guys next week, same time, same place, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at Mindshift Talk Radio. You guys be blessed, and peace.
Mindshift Radio.